Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. This channel, Trauma and Social Change, it's absolutely the moment for that, isn't it? I'm Steve Hoskinson. I'm the founder of Organic Intelligence. I've been teaching in this area of trauma, embodiment, and social change for about 25 years. It's an honor, really, for us to be sponsoring this channel where we're going to hear a multiplicity of voice, all unique contributors to our collective understanding of how to move from trauma and support then social change. Our unique voice in organic intelligence has something to do with a koan that I'd like to present to you, which is trauma means unintegrated resource. And that's a koan, and if you'd like and are feeling intrigued about that riddle, then tune in to the post-trauma system development course that we are offering here. The coupon code that'll get you half off on that is ENJOY. Now, enjoy this next presentation, and we'll look forward to another meaningful time as we explore these topics, trauma and social change. Enjoy.
And let me introduce our panelists. So first, you see Alexandra Wilwowska. She's business coach, therapist, and tango teacher. Also, we call her Mother of Embodiment here in Russia, and you all know why pretty soon, I'm sure. So next is Jonathan Martin, psychotherapist, educator, and healer from Israel. And I saw him doing very watery, flowing stuff. I think it's also an important characteristic, but you'll figure that for yourselves. Many of his clients, says Jonathan, are ultra-Orthodox Jewish men who are not regularly exposed to Semitic practices. So it's a very interesting site for our cross-cultural discussion. And Ron Hildebrito with us. Ron is certified embodied facilitator, empowerment and compassion coach, and nonviolent communication practitioner and mediator. And we're also waiting for Douglas Dhanapal, and when he arrives, I will introduce him. Let's hope so. And let's start. Let's start from, I said a few words about you. Tell us a little bit more about your cultural background from the embodiment perspective, will you? And I see that Willy is frozen in a very particular cultural.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. So maybe.
She's are back. You ready to start?
Yeah. So the question is, could you tell us a little bit more about your cultural background from the embodiment perspective? Yeah, well, who's willing to start?
I can start.
Yeah, thanks.
I have a mixture of cultural background. I am English, and I have no English DNA whatsoever. My parents came from Trinidad, and so I think I was probably aware of cultural differences from being, a little girl at school in England, to kind of how to be with the other people that were different from me, and how it was when I went to school in Trinidad, where I felt more ease. I have a memory of how much it was fun, it was colorful, I could be myself more easily. So I'm always aware of kind of cultural background. So there's a part of me that's not English at all, quite showy and bubbly and a bit over the top. That's not English. So I'm aware that I have mixtures, and I really adapt wherever I go. I'm doing this, embodied mirroring and just checking, is it okay to relax and just be anyhow? Or do I have to do things in a particular way? So I'm very mixed. I think that's a bit of a bonus. I can be quite flexible wherever I go. Thank you.
So a mixture of a lot of cultures gives you an opportunity to fit in like almost any community. Okay.
I think
we'll see how it goes. Thanks, Yaron.
Thank you.
So Jonathan, what do you have to put in?
So I really relate to what Ron shared about sort of kind of mirroring different cultures. And I grew up in New York. I live in Israel, but I grew up in New York. And, you know, New York is a melting pot of communities. But growing up in Far Rockaway, New York, we were kind of very, very insulated from the non-Jewish communities. It was kind of like you understood that you kept separate. And for me, kind of embodiment was helpful because I loved playing basketball. And I would play basketball with kind of like the non-Jewish guys, friends or kids around, you know, on the block. And that was something that was very powerful for me to see. Before I knew what embodiment meant, I saw that the body and being able to move is something that connects between people in different cultures that wouldn't otherwise connect. I live in Israel now for the last 25 years. And here also in Israel, I'm part of an ultra-Orthodox community. But what I found is that embodiment practices are, in order for me to learn embodiment, and I've been practicing for yoga and meditation and dance and movement for about 7.5 years. And most of that happens in Tel Aviv, sort of in a more secular community. And I'm a body psychotherapist, and that community also is extremely secular. And what I've been focusing on for the last few years is learning how to translate embodiment for religious, mostly men. I think women also need it, but it's like being able to take this practices, this connection to the body. And because I find that in religious circles, in addition to this Western split between body and mind, there's an additional split of spirit and body. There's a certain hierarchical relationship where the body is at best a distraction, and in certain cases is bad or is a problem. And learning to translate the body as a resource and something that is helpful is something that I spend a lot of time with. And I see that my clients who connect to it, they're very excited to be able to have an experiential form of therapy, not to just talk about issues, but to be able to actually have an experience. But they're often coming with a big deficit in terms of, you know, connection, like we're living from here up and sort of not connected. So that's something that's I'm exploring and excited to hear from other people also maybe who have been bridging the gap between different cultures and bringing embodiment to other cultures. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I think it is a very big part of how to interject the embodiment of different culture, you know, to transfer it. Okay. Do you want to add anything?
Oh, my turn, yeah. Okay, I'll try. I'm still struggling with my connection, but let me know if I freeze or something happened with my connection. Can you hear me? Sorry for this.
It's okay, we can hear you. Please go on.
It's okay, yeah. Okay, sorry. So I was born in Soviet Union. I'm quite experienced person. And it was very multicultural country. And we connected with people from different parts and from different cultures. And I was born and I live in Moscow. Again, it's very multicultural place. And also I'm Jewish. I'm not Orthodox and I'm not, I don't follow, I don't practice. But quite often I found myself like I act or think like a Jewish woman. So it's quite interesting for me to find all these details inside myself, inside my embodiment, and inside my mind. And also I spent more than 15 years dancing tango. It's totally another culture from another continent. And again, it was very interesting for me to explore how my Russian embodiment, feed 1,000 feet to Argentinian culture and Argentinian history. So yeah, quite a lot of different mixes of culture.
Thanks. So it is mixed. It is very different from all of you. And, you know, even by the way you are sitting in front of a screen, it is also a little bit different. How do you say, do you agree? What do you see right now? Okay, well, I see the agreement and some nonverbal communication about it. Okay, you know, I wanted to start also this conversation from actually grounds, from clarification. What is cultural embodiment? What does it really mean? How do you define cultural embodiment for yourself? Okay.
I have an answer, because cultural embodiment is one of my top interests, and I observe and think about it a lot for last maybe 7 or 10 years, and maybe I will talk more about cultural embodiment during my session on Saturday. So if you want to learn about it from my point of view. For me, it could be different aspects of our embodiment. So how we keep our posture, for example, the intention of the body, tension or relaxation in the body, maybe some typical gesture or some small details in the body that create our life. And we can find it, and it could be it could be from different resources. In fact, it could be from family, it could be from my district, my block, it could be from my street, it could be from my country, my religious, my traditions, my practices. So there are a lot of resources for these, but we can explore it, we can find it, we can be aware about them. And also, we, from my perspective, there are a lot of resource in these details in our cultural embodiment that we can find. So we can use it, and we can use it to understand other people better as well. We appreciate their cultural embodiment.
Yeah, thanks. Jonathan, Ron, do you have anything to add?
To me, it's interesting when we embody, all of us, I think all of us on this panel, and I think all of us in today's world really embody many, many cultures inside of us. So for example, if we grew up in New York, or for myself, like growing up in New York, there's a certain, rush or a certain forward bent that I feel in my body when I think about Manhattan. At the same time, we grew up in the suburbs, so there's a certain quietness or a certain relax, and I can feel inside of me both embodiments. And I think this is also this resource that we have inside of us to connect to different types of embodiments inside us and to move with them is very, very powerful. And coming to Israel and living in a culture that is polarized and contains within it so many different societies. So I think, again, the ability to, the easiest thing for us to shift, at least momentarily, is our body. Like, it's definitely to shift attitudes, difficult to shift ideas, because these are things that are so entrenched. But to move my hand, to move my body, is something that we can do. Most of us can do that. Even, a client who comes in depressed, they can lift up. It's not necessarily going to stick with them, but the ability to embody different cultures and different states that we'd like to acquire or make more of us is something that's very, very powerful. I think that is that's what I what comes up for me when I speak of, think about cultural embodiment. Like, what, how can we take, how can we respect the different cultures and take what we need when we need to rush? I can take that New York embodiment. When I need to relax, I can take the more suburban, chilled out. And so that's what I think about it.
Does it mean that you're saying that cultural embodiment is kind of a bodily state?
I think so. I think you can tell. I mean, especially if you look at people walk, or if you go to an airport and you just see different people. I don't know that you can, any one of us can do this 100%, but we can get a sense of people, of what their habits, of their gait, their movement. And there's so much that is stored in the body. And again, I think temporarily, it's easy for us to shift and move. And then if we can practice, then we can shift certain things. But yes, I think that it's something that we can notice, we can see in different people, and we can use it as a resource.
Yeah. Thanks, Jonathan. I'd like to follow that with a bit about movement. Dance has always been a big passion of mine. And living in England, I've loved things like ballroom dancing, tap dancing, jazz dancing, and English folk dance, because that's what's around me, you know. But the way I do it, the way I dance is quite different. I allow my hips to be more, to have more movement. And it's really noticed by people in England, because culturally in England, the pelvis is often held more straight and solid. And where, for me, it's just automatically obvious to move more in the hips. And so it's very noticeable to people. The way that I do English folk dance is to be hugely overexcited, because I adore music and I adore moving with music. And people translate that as flirting. This is not flirting, this is just me loving the moment. But it's, that's you know, it's easy to see how these interpretations arise, because I've given myself permission to just relax and be myself. Whereas when I was younger, I would have tried to fit in around other people. And that often meant being quite quiet and not speaking, just in case, you know, that was the wrong thing. So I'm fascinated always by movement. And another quality is, growing up in London, I would be on holiday in Trinidad, and I would take off down the road with this directional yang quality, let's get from A to B as quickly as we can. And my cousins would be standing behind me with that beautiful kind of rolling gait in the West Indies, like, what are you hurrying for, you know? And suddenly realizing, oh my gosh, that's really different. Obviously, practicing embodiment means I can choose one or the other, or many other ways of proceeding down the road without being stuck to one particular embodiment. But it's really noticeable how these patterns live in us, and they really show up when we go to somewhere different. I find all that really special, and I'm always noticing these things, always watching and looking out for people's different embodiment. For me, it's really great to be able to choose to relax and be myself and just be at ease. But I love to copy and play with different embodiment if I'm around different people.
Thank you. So I think from what all of you say that there are like different states, so you can go into this state or that state, just embody somebody's embodiment. And in this case, what is the difference with culture? Well, I guess culture is something deeper, right? What are your thoughts on this? Like cultural embodiment.
So I would like to you know, talk about a certain embodiment that I feel in ultra-Orthodox Judaism. And I feel that perhaps in many religions, but especially Orthodox Judaism, you know, there's a code of law kind of called the Shulchan Aruch, which is means the set table, which is basically a description or a prescription of how to live life from when you wake up in the morning till when you go to sleep at night, every day of the week, every holiday. And Orthodox Jews live or try to live with this sort of, you know, linear ordained way of living. And what's interesting is that for me, embodiment is a non-linear experience of where I allow the wisdom of my body to guide me, to show me what is appropriate or what do I need to do. And for a long time, like, how do we reconcile that? This is something that I wonder about other religions. And I think in terms of Jews who are learning to give themselves space and to be with themselves, be with their bodies, how do they reconcile this embodiment of linear action? This is what you do, this is what prescribed. And then this statement of being okay with yourself and learning to give yourself more space. And what came to me recently, I had a fascinating story where I was in this group, I participated in this men's group of body psychotherapists, a completely secular group. And somebody quoted, this is a fascinating because we're talking about meditation and non-dual awareness and a state of being, a state of just being relaxed, no matter what the chaos is that's going on outside. And somebody quoted the first line of this book. The secular Jew said, you know, it says in this book, you didn't even know which book. He said, it says in the book that someone should wake up like a lion to serve God. Now for me, like, that sentence growing up was always this thing of like, don't be lazy, don't sleep in bed, and just, like, you know, jump out of bed. And I actually knew people who tried to kind of keep that law. And the second they opened their eyes, they would like jump out of bed. And I think, you know, what something that came to me when I heard this person speaking is that the discipline of religion is something that we really all need. In other words, if the goal is a sense of being and a sense of kind of this, just to be able to be present with ourselves. So the discipline to our practice, whether it's a practice of meditation, whether it's a practice of religion, whatever the practice is, we need that discipline. And the statement to be like a lion is really a statement of embodiment. It's like, how do I embody, how do I allow in my body? It's like that first statement of how do I allow in my body the power and the strength of a lion to create discipline. And then I got curious, like, how do lions wake up? Like, how, like, you know, I said, you know, let me like look this up. Let me see how they do that. And I saw this beautiful video on YouTube where this lion, you know, when the lion wakes up, he's pedunculating, he's yawning, he's like stretching, he's like moving his head very slowly. He's doing this beautiful embodied practice. And I thought to myself, like, you know, the first line of this book that dictates from morning to night everything that Orthodox Jews are doing, it starts off with this, be like a lion, which for me, after seeing this video, means be with myself, be with what's going on, learn to move slowly, learn to yawn, to stretch when I'm waking up. And in a certain sense, maybe that sets the tone and it can connect people who want to be disciplined. But how do we learn to be disciplined in a way that starts with an embodied approach that is kind of slowly moving towards a state that we want? And that's something that I feel is like sort of, we can choose to take a culture which is very linear, very going a certain way, and see the parts of it that are more embodied, that are more going with the flow in terms of what needs to happen for me to bring myself in an embodied way to that discipline.
Yeah, this is so nice, you know, like feel a little bit like a lazy lion.
Yeah.
Thanks. Well, I saw that Ron wanted to add something. Is it? Or you were just also embodying lion a little bit?
I was joining in, and I just wanted to mention the kind of special way that with there's some connection between Israeli culture and the Jewish religion. It's like they're twins. And that's really special, because often religion is a separate thing. you know, and there's a predominantly Christian religion in this country. And I still find that people who have queries around those things, it's partly cultural and partly religious. And part of it is to keep things quiet and not make emotions visible. And I've really noticed this with people who say to me, I can talk to you about this, but I can't go down to my church and talk about how I'm feeling, which is a bit sad, but it's also simply the reality that part of it, you know, British culture is around not being very open with the experience within and not to show it too much. There's the, you know, many of these things show up with clients of mine, that there are many things in their lives they have never spoken about. And so it becomes very important to, like Jonathan was saying, to connect with the actual humanity of being yourself rather than being overlaid with how you're supposed to be and what's allowed and what's permissible and what's going to be appreciated and welcomed or pushed back, shut down, suppressed, kept quiet. So a lot of that I find in my work is around, which is not all, of course, many of my clients are not English, but there is a certain quality of, I'm really stuck with something, how do I get out of this? And the cultural sense of keep quiet, look polite, don't show up with your full self is very relevant. So I wanted to say something about that. I notice in the chat there's a little comment on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, European culture is very stiff and disembodying, which leads to suppression of trauma and violence. And before that, there was Yasmin's observation about gestures, that in Western culture, we more rely to verbal communication and less to like embodied expression.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I also noticed that you're talking about kind of how the meaning of the words with lion, with different examples, changing the embodiment, changing the perception and the expression of it through the body. And maybe it's worth discussing the language and its role in cross-cultural communication through embodiment as well. And I know that Vilya, Alexandra has a lot to say about that.
What I want to follow, for me, the question, where is my personal embodiment, my personal patterns, my personal habits, because that's me. Or where I, of course, I learned somewhere about this, and I was trained to do this somewhere during the life. But for me, it's very interesting to find the details, which definitely cultural, for example. It's easy to find them when we connect, when we meet with people from different cultures. And in this communication, in this situation, we can realize that, oops, I really do this and that in my body at that moment. And I have some example in my mind, and it connected with my embodied experience. For example, in Argentina and other South American countries, you know, this manner when you ask, especially official people, when you ask when, the answer is mañana. So mañana means tomorrow, but in fact, it means at some moment, maybe, never. I don't care. So, and you can read about it and you can know about it, what manana means in this culture. But in fact, when you meet this situation, you still experience the reaction, like when, maybe when, what does it mean manana, when? And at that moment, your cultural experience, your cultural patterns around agreements, about time, about obligations or whatever, they come up at that moment and you do it in your body. And it could be a conflict, it could be disappointment or other type of suffering, in fact. So just because I don't have this feeling, this sensing, this experiencing of mania, I can't do this for myself because of my culture. Because, for example, Russian culture is quite strict when tomorrow deal. And if I have this feeling in my body, I can't accept this answer. And it's huge cultural misunderstanding at that point. And we have these cases a lot in everyday life. Not necessary to go to Argentina to meet.
Thank you for such a lively example. And I was thinking maybe we can bring a little bit more of experience right into this session. And my question is, how does your cultural embodiment is influencing you right now? What are you doing with your bodies, in your bodies, and maybe what do you observe in others might be interesting for our participants, maybe to think about it right now for themselves and then compare what our experienced speakers will say about it. Yeah, I can see that you have answers, but well, you can start with me, by the way.
Yeah, I have answer for sure. I have some troubles. I'm not sure in my connection, and at the same time, I have to do all the things right. So it's our cultural pattern: do it right or don't do it ever. So and I can't do it right now, so I'm stressed a lot, I'm tense, and I'm lifting myself up. I generated and I have this question: is it okay now if I'm right? So, and I do it all the time during our conversation.
So I'd like to share that, like, I'm sitting in my therapist chair in my clinic. And when I'm in my clinic, like, I talk very, very slowly. And I create this kind of like mindful meditative space. And it's like very different than a teacher role, or to kind of be animated and present and express. And I just find myself kind of like settling down into this much more meditative space. And I'm kind of like, you know what, I'm going to go with it. I'm okay with it. I don't know if I'm going to say like the three or four or five things that I was planning on saying, because I'm just kind of like letting it go and being with all of you, feeling this sense of expansion of being with people all over the world and just allowing that to sort of flow through my body. And that's kind of what I'm embodying now.
And what part of this you would call cultural embodiment?
So it's interesting. I think for me, practicing for so many years, so for me, it's like I have this like cultural, like I could talk about New York, I could talk about Israel, I could talk about religion. But for me, my overwhelming, almost like my culture is this bodied, being settled in my body, constantly reminding myself that my feet are on the floor, I'm sitting on a chair, kind of moving micro movements to kind of regulate myself. And that, in a certain sense, that for me is like this like culture that is overlaying all the other cultural embodiments that I have. And especially when I'm in my clinic. So like if I'm going shopping, so I'll probably get lost in that, and that I got to go. And then I'll start like dropping things and losing things, or I'll be less focused. But when I'm here in this presence, so there's a certain practice that becomes very, very much a part of my embodiment.
Mm-hmm. So we are back to this question from Alexandra. What is cultural and what is personal, and how does it actually interrelate it? Okay, so we'll see where it goes further. Okay, Ron.
What's come up for me is a bit different. It's about driving. So when I'm in England, my embodiment varies from, I'm at ease and I'm relaxed and everything is great. And every now and again, this huge impatience, get out of the way, come, you know, and this is only me inside of my car. But in Trinidad, I remember this feeling. You drive with the window down, you swear at everybody, and it would be a shock coming back to England and not behaving like that. And it was just, in Trinidad, everyone's driving on the horn and swearing at all the other drivers. Please forgive me if anyone's from Trinidad. It's a little example. It's not the whole thing. But it just, the whole embodiment of that is completely, dramatically different. And this contrast really shows up in the body. And of course, returning to England, there would always be this longing to continue to have the window open where it's not warm enough to have the window open, and to long for that. And I think I've always had that sense of fitting in, knowing how to fit in, knowing how to comply with others to be part of the group. And so this morning I couldn't find the link to come onto this call, and I was aware of a bit of tension going on, a bit, you know, the shoulders rising and not being ready. And that's my personal embodiment is that it's hard to be ready. I'm usually I usually take things slowly. And so when I gave myself plenty of time, and then I found I didn't know how to do that, I felt anxious. I went into my head. What do I do? What's the answer? And listening to you all has been really beautiful and settling. That we're all different, and that's great. I really enjoy that. I really love how different people are. And we've talked a bit about religion, and I went to Catholic schools in England. And so I grew up around Irish people, Italian people, and Polish people that were in my school all the time. And that was really precious because everybody was different, and I really enjoy that.
You actually partly answered my next question about, you know, how your cultural and personal embodiment, you know, to make it a little bit even useful in the practical sense for our participants. What do you use when you encounter, for example, some unknown culture, some difficult situation, which you don't have some patterns in your own culture, how can you use embodiment to help yourself in this situation?
So for me, somatic mindfulness, which is this, you know, Daniel Siegel speaks about mindfulness as being aware of the moment-to-moment basis of my own experience from a place of KOL. And KOL stands for curiosity, openness, acceptance, and love. So if I can bring curiosity to what's going on inside of me, I can bring openness, which means I don't have any expectations of knowing what's in there. And I bring acceptance even, letting it be, and even love for what's happening. So if I practice that enough, then when I encounter somebody else, the other, so I can bring that same sense of KOL, of curiosity, openness, acceptance, and love, and not make these assumptions. Like I was thinking about what you said before about mañana, like when you hear mañana, so we come with our own, like, what does that mean? What do you mean? There's no such thing. You have to tell me, when is it happening? And when we're able to first experience ourselves, our own frustration, we can't jump to the other person right away. But if we're able to experience, like, what is happening for me right now, be open, accepting, and loving to it, and then we could bring that to the other person. And then we can experience certain cultural differences or things that annoy us without our own overlay, our own expectations. And because when we come from the top down, when we have like our view of what things should be and how things should be, so then it's challenging to walk in the world and allow others to be who they are. And it's whether it's different cultures, whether it's people that are challenging us, that mindfulness practice for me is for me as embodiment and as a way of allowing others to be who they are.
Thank you, Jonathan. And, you know, being Russian and partly Korean, I really also precise. And my question is how, I really like what you're saying, that loving and acceptance, but how do you exactly, how do you do that?
I think that having this like mnemonic KOL for me is like such a helpful thing. I think it's like something, you know, my wife will even say to me, are you in KOL now? Like, are you, if I'm getting, so it's like something that's just like present. And I really work with it with all my clients. Like it's something that I'll bring in one of the early sessions. And it's something that's like, it's like a practice that is something that is, you know, because curiosity is really the.
Oh, and the most interesting moment, huh? So I guess we can, just practice that Jonathan's move for being open and loving to this situation. Yeah, and wait for him and maybe.
And if I find the answer.
So would you jump in and continue? Alexandra?
I can jump in. Yeah, for me, the option, okay, maybe there's some quality of embodiment or some quality of life that is not strong part of my culture. Like, for example, playfulness, which is, I see a lot in Ron, for example, or in people from other cultures. And I know about it, I'm aware that, and I want this quality, and maybe I have a situation where I need it, I miss it. So I can organize my life, or I can do something to look at this, just to have these people around, I don't know, to inspire myself by movies, or something like this. I remember during, I have my personal trick, I'm a quite earthy person. I'm a little bit down, I'm structured, I'm slow. And to balance my personal embodiment, and it fits very well with cultural embodiment, Russian cultural embodiment. We are strong and we can stay here forever. Don't worry. We will be here. And it's not good for creativity or maybe playfulness, or just for joy. And I developed some practice to balance it with more light, more playfulness. And I found this quality, in my personal embodiment while I was in Paris. And since that time, my, as I say, usual matine to go to several days to Paris just to, I can do this a little bit up. Or during quarantine, for example, I had no such opportunity. So I found myself watching series filmed in Paris, or movies from Paris, or just listening French. And it helped me during quarantine not to slow down in my chair, but to keep this playfulness alive. Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, sorry about that. My internet dropped.
Yeah, this is great. I think that was a fantastic example of, you know, cross-cultural communication through embodiment, because while you were gone, Alexandra just told us about, you know, how to survive, and her tips on to make her embodiment to the better, bigger range. And yeah. So do you want to finish what you were saying?
Well, I'm not really sure where I got disconnected. So I'll just like join you wherever you are in the discussion.
Okay. So Ron, if you have anything to add?
I really enjoyed Alexandra speaking about we can invite new different qualities. So for me, it's the opposite, which is to practice my groundedness, my solidity. The quality is there, but it did the practice. And it came up for me a couple of days ago. I did some filming, and this beautiful lady said, "You must look at the camera." And my brain said, "Oh, no, I will be distracted. You know, I will look out the window. I'll be looking around the room." And it was funny because actually I had no difficulty whatever in looking at the camera. And I attribute that completely to embodied practice, that I could stay with that intention, that I could be completely grounded and do the work that I had to do without distraction. And I was really celebrating that, because my brain knew that is not my pattern. And yet I was able to carry out what I had to do. The other quality of look at the camera means you can't look at any notes. And so I made some videos completely speaking from the heart. And afterwards, I was feeling really the lightness then came to me, the joy of look what I did, you know. And so the beauty of when we think about other qualities, we can practice them, and we can choose something that helps to increase a quality in us that we need and that we would like, and that will be really supportive in the life that we're choosing and living. And this, again, with my coaching clients, this kind of thing becomes very important about how to create something new or create more of something with embodied practice, and choosing things that the client would enjoy together. How would it be to practice this and bring that quality? It's a very special conversation about, you know, in generating, creating qualities in ourselves that we really want more of, and bringing them into the world, into our lives, into the world. It's very powerful.
Thank you. This is inspiring as well. And we have two very interesting questions in the chat. And one of them is, how do we bridge cross-cultural difference when engaging these communities that have no idea what we're talking about when we say embodiment? How can we expand our collective play when we may be closing people down with our openness? Jonathan.
Yeah, I just want to say this reminded me of a client that I had who the first time he came to me, so for the first half an hour, I was that very present, embodied presence. And after a certain amount of time, he said to me, you know, it's really, you know, you're really looking at me with this intensity and I'm feeling you and you're feeling like it's like too much. So I said, you know, I could really change into like this regular therapist who just like talks to you and like asks you a question about your family and hey, you know, we could do that. He's like, no, I don't believe you could do that. And I said, okay. And I shifted. I think being able to mirror and attune to other people, and yes, there are people who if you come too wavy, it's gonna like squick them out a little. They're not gonna feel comfortable with it. Or if we're like very embodied and present and making too much eye contact, that's gonna feel threatening. And I think that our own embodiment, attunement to other people can allow us to sense that and then kind of change in ourselves how we're relating in a way that really can be more comfortable. And it's always really gonna be a combination of our experience and them, if we're able to sort of bridge that.
Thank you, thanks. And I'm just really want to give a go for the last question, and we have only 3 minutes left. So what is the relationship between cultural embodiment and collective trauma? And I'm pretty sure that actually this whole channel, Trauma and Social Change, is a little bit about it, but let's hear what our panelists have to say. Yep, Alexandra.
So for me, cultural embodiment is something that wider or beyond trauma. And at the same time, it could include trauma patterns as well, because culture consists based also on history of these people. So, and there are several cultures which for sure from trauma therapy's perspective, we can suppose they're a little bit more traumatized. And so we can see more trauma patterns in normal behavior or in stress reaction. So it's connected for sure. But I suggest, and now there are a lot of works about this topic. And at the same time, I suggest be aware about cultural trauma that you can have in your body as well. And be aware about other patterns, which is not trauma patterns, but we also have.
Okay, so this is almost the end of our discussion, and the video from our sponsor will be played very soon, but please don't leave, because after that, we will come back to our panelists with one last question. And Georgina, if you're ready, we can see Steve's video now, please. Okay. Well, while she's preparing, I will remind you one more thing, that this session is going to be on the portal for another 48 hours. And after that, you can upgrade your portal to have it forever. And I will help Georgina a little bit and post some links in the chat. how I can do that. Okay, here you go. And don't forget that after we finish the session, I will come after we watch the video. Georgina, no sound, unfortunately. Let's use some other embodiment tools and ground, breathe, a little bit, French air from what Alexandra showed us. And I'll just tell you that Steve Hoskinson and his project Organic Intelligence is the sponsor for our whole channel, Trauma and Social Change. And a lot of what happening here is due to these guys. So thank you. And you can find a lot of information about this project on our webpage. So as I also said, you can see the link to Coffee Break rooms. After we finish this session, you can go there and join and interact with people, chat about maybe you have more questions or your own thoughts about cultural embodiment and how does it all work. And in the last 3 minutes, what is your top tip for our participants on how to be more embodied? Yeah, who's ready to go?
I'll suggest something.
Yeah.
Notice closely how you are. Just simply go between, say, tension and relaxation. Just notice how it is. And then notice what you might choose, whether the same or something different. So just keep that awareness alive.
Beautiful. Thank you.
I don't know where I got lost in my description of Cole. So I'm just going to mention that again. For me, my top embodiment tip is really to learn to be in Cole and to practice, even when things are calm, to see what can I notice either in my environment or myself, come to it from a place of curiosity, openness, acceptance, and love until it becomes a habit. And when we can do that, then it will be there for us when we have stress or difficult situations.
And my tips for this panel will be, we all, in every culture, we have some gesture that means thank you. Let's do it consciously right now for all who are here during this panel. So, for example, Russian will be Vasiba. Mm.
Yeah. Thank you. That's this beautiful. Is beautiful. And also, I just find myself kind of calm despite of some technical problems and missing Douglas, but still, thank you very much. Thank you for your cultural and personal embodiment. And let's meet on other sessions of this conference. And thank you, Georgina, for struggling.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you for hosting.
Thank you, Kim.
Bye. See ya.
Bye. Yeah. Bye.